This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, before we power rank the power rankings, a congratulations is in order. Texans co-founder and senior chair, Janice McNair, the matriarch of the Houston Texans football franchise, she will be receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2025 Houston Sports Awards ceremony.
Awesome.
Recognizing her role in bringing the NFL football back to Houston and her involvement in the community.
It was tremendous. Nice to see her out there at Andre's induction.
Oh, the ring presentation.
Yeah. She was out there at midfield.
That was
for
very
that presentation.
Cool.
Andre gave her a nice hug.
Yep.
That was really nice.
That was excellent. So and I believe John Lopez was the one that that shared that news with her, that she was getting that honor.
She's been, which Houston Texans are in the Houston Sports Hall of Fame? Is it just Andre at this point?
I think it's just Andre at this point.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. I believe so.
So, okay, good. That'll be nice.
That's awesome. Yeah.
When is it this year?
Well, the ceremony, it's usually in January or February.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the exact date. But that's very well deserved.
I've told you before, it was really cool the first time Bob McNair addressed the team in 2002. It was really interesting the way he presented to us. He told the story of just why he owns a football team now. Mm-hmm. And it was one that was basically sounded like civic duty almost. Like don't make any bones about it. He was going to make some money on the Texans. He knew that. But that it's not like it was his dream to own a football team or anything, but he realized after the Oilers left and all these other cities were being mentioned about possible places and nobody was really doing anything to get the Texans, get the next franchise here. He said, all right, well, I guess it's me. I guess I got some time on my hands and a big wad of cash. Let's do this thing.
Well, and I think
that. He said that exactly. He said, and fellas, I said, let's do this thing.
He could say it in such a way you'd be like, yeah.
It would actually sound like South Carolina more than...
He could actually mix in... Bob McNair would have been able to mix in the words wads of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd been like, man, that is awfully genteel right there.
Yeah.
It is very elegant. They have conducted themselves as a franchise in that way that you're talking about. Like, the civic duty part of it is huge with the Texans, and that's a big reason why Janice McNair is getting the Lifetime Achievement Award. If you're just tuning in, 2025 Houston Sports Awards Ceremony, they will celebrate Janice McNair. So we look forward to that, and congratulations to Janice and the McNair family. Let's get to the power ranking.
She was my first person that I'd met where I'm like, oh, these super rich people can be like way different than they're characterized in political ads.
She is. She's so nice.
Or political cartoons, I guess. Yeah. She's just the nicest lady.
She is. I the video of her when they hired D'Amico, and D'Amico visited her at their home.
Yeah.
It's one of the coolest things, man. It was just so very cool to see. Power ranking the power rankings. How is D'Amico Ryan's football team doing? Well, let's take a look. We've got four different power rankings that we use for this in no specific order yet. CBSSports.com, TheAthletic.com, ESPN.com, and SI.com. Coming in fourth, they rank the Texans 11th. SI.com. Here's what they say, Seth.
What's the AI-generated blurb say?
For the last 2 weeks, defenses have been coming at C.J. Stroud and exposing some serious soft spots in the Houston offensive line. That is true. Stroud is the fourth most pressured quarterback in the NFL, and while he's Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson good against muddy backfields this season, there has to be a reason why so many opposing coordinators think this is the way to finally break Houston's offense. Of course, with another potentially significant injury to the team's receiving core, of course, he's referring to Stephon Diggs, who we have no update on yet, it could soon be open season on this unit.
Right. So, again, I told you I had a discussion with Robert Land yesterday about just like how much of the focus should be on the offensive line in general versus just focus on Kenyon Green.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenyon Green is the biggest blemish right now. And there are some of the protections that they're using are almost completely to help out Kenyon Green, I think, and it makes it harder for tight ends and running backs. I think at this point, where you get to this point in the season, you can swap out Kenyon Green, you can figure some things out there. There are other issues in pass protection that I think need to be solved by basically C.J. Stroud and the quick game. And some of the things that we started to see last week where either you're rolling C.J. out in running boots or you're getting the tight ends involved. You're seeing all of these things this year in the NFL, these simulated blitzes where you got everybody stacked up at the line of scrimmage. There are, if you spend too much time trying to figure out who's blitzing and who's not, you'll get paralysis by analysis. Some of it is simply there's soft spots there in the first 10 yards when you've got everybody stacked up at the line of scrimmage. It's really hard for those guys to get out to their spots, those linebackers to get out to their spots in zone coverage. You've got to start exposing some of that. And I think they've made some good inroads into that in the last couple weeks. It's just got to be more of a steady diet of it and with a little bit more consistency. But without fixating on just Kenyon Green and the offensive line in general, there have just been a lot of breakdowns in pass protection in general with everybody charged with pass blocking.
I agree. All right, let's get to a power ranking outlet number three. SI.com was number four. Number three on the list is CBSSports.com. No, not CBSSports.com. Sorry, TheAthletic.com has the Texans rated sixth overall. And I am pulling up The Athletic on my phone because we've had bad Wi-Fi here today.
I think they've got them ranked fifth overall.
Oh, they've got them fifth. Yeah, sorry. I'm still a mess from
Not having internet.
Oh, yeah, it is CBS Sports. CBSSports.com. Yeah. Okay, the CBSSports.com has them fifth, too. I thought it said sixth. Here we go. I'll put CBSSports.com third. They have them fifth. They're winning games, but do they look that good in doing so? It just hasn't been as crisp as expected this season. Yeah.
I think the biggest surprise and the kind of the gap in how things look statistically and where the team actually is, I would say, is with the defense, where statistically, in a lot of ways, they're a top five defense. But when it comes to opponent points per game, which isn't all on the defense, but that's how things feel. And, you know, the Texans have been dealt some short fields at times defensively. They're 15th. In points allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And offensively, they're right hovering around the middle there, too. That's a point.
When you only score points in one half of the game,
yes,
that'll happen.
I mean, this is the problem with the Texans right now, where, yes, they're statistically, they're in the top of the NFL in some categories defensively. They've got some good stats offensively. And yet, at the end of the day, the one advanced stat that matters the most, how many points do you score?
Yeah.
They're middle of the pack offensively and defensively.
Yep.
And their scoring differential right now is right around plus 10 mm-hmm. points. So that's where they're very much capable of just fixing a few things and becoming a much more powerful football team. But right now, in a lot of ways, they're operating like a 500 football team.
Yeah, if you I also went to Pro Football Focus yesterday just to look at where their regular players that have enough snaps rank at their position. They've only got a few players that are in like the top 15 to 20% at their position right now. For a 6-2 team, and I know Pro Football Focus is not the gospel or anything, but I think
you start to look at like the thing in the aggregate.
You aggregate everything about a team. Yeah. They've got individual player-wise, and maybe this is a compliment to D'Amico and the coaching staff, is that the whole record-wise is greater than at least what Pro Football Focus thinks is the sum of the parts.
Yeah.
The only players they've got, from what I recall yesterday, that were near the top of their position, both defensive ends are in the top 15, thereabouts, out of 120 of them in mm-hmm. the NFL. Azeez Al-Shaire has been a very good inside linebacker, according to Pro Football Focus, and C.J. Stroud is the 8th-rated quarterback right now in the league. Beyond that, it's a lot of guys who are in the kind of mid-range. There's a few guys that are buried deep. Kenyon Green is literally rated the worst guard in football right now.
Sometimes when the O-line propaganda machine gets fired up, they'll bring up Laramie Tunsil's pass protection grade
yesterday
on PFF, or Titus Howard's pass grade on PFF. I'm like, okay, if we're playing the PFF game, PFF also has them as total players ranked middle of the pack.
Yes.
Laremy Tunsil is the 32nd highest rated offensive tackle in football right
now. Where's he on the pay scale?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So if we're going to play the PFF game, let's point out the total picture and not cherry pick here. Those guys have been in the middle of the road. Run blocking matters.
Yep.
And especially on this football team and with this offensive coordinator, and they've been middle of the pack. So that, so again, I don't buy into the grades 100%, but if you're going to play that game, don't cherry pick. Tell it like it is. That there's more to it than just their PFF pressures allowed score.
Agreed. So number four, SI.com. Number three, CBSSports.com. Number two, The Athletic also has the Texans fifth. And their category for a topic this week with each team is something scary. Probably because it's Halloween in 2 days. The scary thing about the Texans, the second year jump has not happened, it says. After C.J. Stroud's debut season, a step forward offensively was baked into the high expectations for the Texans. Instead, Houston's offense has been basically the same and maybe a little worse.
Yeah.
The Texans were 20th in offensive success rate in 2023. This year, they are 28th. That means just the percentage of plays that do what you're supposed to do on those plays, basically. Stroud was 7th in the league in EPA per dropback last season. He slipped to 19th this year. That's expected points added. That's an advanced stat. And yet this team still leads the AFC South by 2 games. Yeah, their defense has been very good.
Right, right.
When it needs to be.
When it needs to be and situationally. Yeah. And then starting to the most promising thing from the last couple weeks has been that they're starting to create turnovers.
Yes.
And it needs to be that kind of a year. I think if the Texans are really going to make a push, I'm losing optimism that they're going to turn the corner offensively. I think the defense has shown signs of growth and progress, and the turnovers are one thing that I was waiting on and have started to show up in the last couple weeks. They're looking like a more opportunistic defense. Quick correction. Yeah. Laremy Tunsil, out of 76 offensive tackles, is ranked 23rd on PFF. If you're a PFF, if you're trying to show how awesome the offensive tackles are and you're only pointing to one PFF score, I counter that with, all right, well, out of Laremy Tunsil's 23rd and Titus Howard is 33rd.
Okay.
If you want to play the PFF game.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's not high.
No.
You know?
Well, certainly for Laremy, not where he probably thinks he is, and certainly not near where he's getting paid to be.
Well, 23rd out of 76 includes a lot of backup offensive tackles also. You know, so 23rd out of 76, all right. There's 64 starting offensive tackles in the league on any given Sunday.
Oh, I'm not sticking up for him. Yeah. Like it's better than where it was though. Like they were further down the list.
I think there were more good examples of good run blocking, like where there were more plays and instances where everybody was doing the right thing in the run game last week, which was encouraging.
Yeah. The one play that I remember, and we'll get to who's number one here in a second. The play where you were talking about before, they were moving the pocket more.
Yeah.
They ran one play where they did the old Kubiak thing where CJ fakes the handoff, stretching left. Everybody goes left and CJ rolls back to the right. He had nobody near him to throw the football, and the crowd cheered that. The crowd was like, oh my God, there's nobody near CJ. Yeah, you could hear the murmur in the crowd that, oh my God, he's not going to get sacked on this play or get hit. And I think there was major disappointment that he didn't take that opportunity to kind of bury his foot and take a shot down the field.
Deep out down
yeah,
there on
he
one,
threw
yeah.
it to Stover or Schultz for 6 yards.
This
instead.
Is where I'm in a weird way, in some of those instances, where he's gone to Schultz or somebody where later in the down, Stephon Diggs is clearly open. I'm okay with that right now because a lot of it really does need to be because of the pass protection. CJ's got to take what the D. If your first read is open and you're not certain about the other ones because you didn't see something that where you know that your second or third read's going to be wide open, take it. You don't turn it down. You got to get rid of the ball. You got to keep moving the chains.
Yep.
When you can't rely on your pass protection.
Number one, power ranking of the power rankings, ESPN.com also has the Texans fifth. So three outlets have them 5. One outlet has them 11th. I want to follow up on that in a second. Their category is best offseason addition. DJ Bieniemy does the blurbs for the Texans here, and he says it's running back Joe Mixon. I'm actually going to let GM Nick Caserio talk about Joe Mixon's impact here.
Joe's been awesome. I think his playing strength and his ability to continually move forward with the ball. I mean, I don't know how many tackles he broke yesterday, but it was a fair amount. So he runs hard. He's in good condition. He gets better as the game goes on. And knock on wood, I'm going to probably put my foot in my mouth, but he takes care of the football. So that's always been something that's a big part of his game. Very versatile, can affect the passing game as well. Anytime you get to the ball, you know, there's a play we got to the ball to him on a perimeter. He was able to turn kind of a nothing play into 8 yards. So Joe's a really good football player. So when he's on the field, he's helped our offense. And, you know, it's credit to him, credit to DB. And it really, it's about his mindset, the way he works. Even you go back and look at training camp, the way he practiced, I mean, he literally would finish every run and sprint to the end zone. So he's been durable. I mean, I know he had the ankle injury, but he's in good condition. He's strong. He's got really good playing strength and he's versatile. So he's been a big asset to the team. There's no question about it.
And I think a big part of him too that's nice is that firsthand feedback he can give the offensive line about what he needs to see, because he has, look, whenever you're running zone runs, a lot of times things can be blocked perfectly, but it looks messy and sloppy as hell to a running back that doesn't understand the flow of everything. Mm-hmm. And for an offensive lineman, sometimes it's a matter of just getting that little micro hold in at the very end, or just getting a guy's shoulder, getting a defensive tackle's shoulders turned, even if you don't have a great position on him. And we've seen a lot more evidence of that in the last couple of weeks, of Joe Mixon taking what looks like barely, it's like navigating the Northwest Passage. It's like you're kind of, there's an iceberg there, there's an ice flow, and you got to figure out a way to try to get your way through that. He's way better than Henry Hudson at finding the Northwest Passage. I feel like Joe Mixon could find the Northwest Passage.
I hope
he's
listening right now, so he knows that he's better than Henry Hudson.
Yes.
Good job, Joe.
We're going to have a river named after, or at least a bayou named after Joe Mixon someday.
Yeah. Up next, why Lewis and Clark are C.J. Stroud's bitches.
Yeah.
All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday.
You're Henry Hudson. What do you like? He failed 5 times to find the Northwest Passage.
That the greats have to fail.
Oh, you found the Hudson River. Ooh, yeah. Was that hard for you? Was that difficult finding the Hudson River?
Yeah. You know what? I feel bad for Mrs. Hudson. Can't find it, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm not even sure it exists, honey.
All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, we just heard from Nick Caserio on Joe Mixon. Nick Caserio on the offensive line for the Texans. Are Seth and I forwarding a lazy narrative right now?
He called us out.
Yeah, a little bit. We'll have that for you coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We've talked a lot over the last few weeks, last couple weeks in particular, about the Texans' pass protection, their ability or inability at times to protect C.J. Stroud, the issues along the offensive line. I'm as tired as anybody of it. I'd love for this offensive line to start playing like their pay grade mm-hmm. would dictate, or their draft position would dictate. It's not our fault. But Nick Caserio was asked on Texans All Access yesterday about the offensive line and the pass protection. And use the L word, man.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it's a little bit of a lazy narrative. So, I mean, there's so many components. I mean, you have 35, 40 passes. So, my quarterback's not hitting every play. So, I mean, there's sometimes there's a defensive call where they have more than you can block. So, you have to have an answer built into the play. So, you know, we had our moments and times where C.J. was able to maneuver in the pocket. He made a number of plays the other day where he kind of found some space and was able to deliver the ball. So, playing quarterback is – part of playing quarterback is playing with a little bit of a dirty pocket. So, I also think, you know, we've got to be careful of painting a picture about the offensive line. We certainly had our moments. I mean, we ran for I don't know how many yards. We threw for 280 yards. So, I mean, there's a lot of positives. So the things that we have to get fixed, you know, we're going to look at those and figure out a way to get them fixed. So, but sometimes you got to give a credit to the defense as well, because sometimes they have a call that's conducive to that situation that maybe doesn't match up with what you have called offensively. So that's the way it goes. So that group cares a lot. The coaches care a lot. So always looking for ways to improve. And if there's an opportunity for us to do that, then yeah, we will.
So D'Amico and Nick are in lockstep as far as what their public stance is going to be on this offensive line.
Yeah.
We're going to highlight the positives. Uh-huh. We know we got to fix some things. It's never perfect. Part of being in the NFL is you got to throw from a muddy pocket sometimes.
Yeah.
And
But as far as it being a lazy narrative, I mean, Kenyon Green got benched in the middle of that game. Is it lazy to assume that that was for poor performance?
At least for one guy, right?
Right. I think it is lazy if you isolate it to the offensive line. I think if you talk about pass protection in general and overall, they got a lot of slipshod play out there from multiple position groups at various times with pass protection. And sometimes it is on the quarterback. The quarterback needs to manage blitzes or anticipate blitzes that don't have an answer. When you got four guys rushing three, there's times where you just flat out don't have answers. And it gets even more complicated when you start to look at, all right, some of the protections. I could see that the instances where it's like a lazy narrative. If you go back a couple games ago when Dalton Schultz, they had a six-man protection on. Dalton Schultz was on the line of scrimmage, and they were sliding to their right. A blitzer came from the left in the Packers game. That's actually not Dalton Schultz's guy based on how that protection is. And it looks glaring, like it's obviously must be Dalton Schultz's, but that's the protection they called, which is an offshoot of the fact that you don't trust your guys in pass protection.
Yeah, man.
You know, like yes, it's more complicated and it's lazy just to say the offensive line sucks, but they're having to make accommodations for their offensive line with some of the pass protections that lead to wide open blitzers at times. And it's just, that's the frustrating part of it. So I'm not going to sit here and act like it's not an issue. CJ's getting pressured more than just about everybody else in the league.
Yeah.
That's not lazy to point that out.
No.
It's not lazy to point out that Kenyon Green got benched in that game.
Yeah, no, that's...
Is that not an issue at left guard?
Right. No, that's just data.
Yeah.
He's getting pressured this much. You know, like that's where I take some issue with it is the fact that, well, yeah, there's some good plays and there's some bad plays. The Texans have more bad plays than the normal NFL team does.
Yeah.
And the one thing that can kill your season is C.J. Stroud getting hurt.
Right.
That's the biggest thing for me. All the other issues this team has had, correctable or not, those are not things that are going to kill your season. You know, like, it'd be nice if they could cut down on the penalties. Does that eventually kill them in a playoff game down the road? Maybe it does. I don't know. But you lose C.J. Stroud and C.J. Stroud gets hurt, and all of a sudden now, halfway through the season, it's a question as to whether or not you're even in the postseason.
Yeah.
You know? So that's my thing there. More from Casario, and I think this is a good point. I think this is something that plays into the favor for the Texans heading into Thursday against the Jets. He said the Jets whooped our ass last year.
I mean, they have talent up and down a roster, so the record is what the record is, so there's nothing we can do about that. That's all we can do is prepare to play a really good Jets team who, I would say, going up to those of us that were here last year, I mean, a 0-0 game kind of turned into an ass-whipping there in the second half, so hopefully we can go up there and play better football and just get ourselves ready to go. So it's a good football team on the road Thursday night. Everybody will probably be dressed up in a costume, so it'll be like we're going to, you know, a Halloween party or something like that. So, but hopefully we can, you know, have ourselves a good week of preparation and get ourselves ready to go.
So I think the loss to the Jets helps the Texans this year. I think it helps the focus.
I was thinking about this, and it's funny because obviously the Jets are a different team than they were last year. All this, there's guys on the Texans who are here who weren't there last year. But I think for the majority of the team, it's as much to do about the actual stadium and the environment and the memories you have on that field. You know how it is. There's things that, you know, when you're like walking a certain in a part of town and you have a very specific memory to what you were thinking when you were walking in that same spot like 7 years ago.
100%.
So I can remember I'm driving on a stretch of road and I'll remember an audiobook I was listening to at that spot.
It's weird.
Yeah.
But I know exactly what you're talking about.
So you don't. I mean, there is something to that about going back to a place where something bad, you don't even have to talk about the names on the roster or anything. There's a lot of guys on this Texans team that remember their performance from last year and aren't happy about it. That, all right, this is, I gotta avenge whatever the hell happened here last year. And I think that's something you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And D'Amico brought up the Jets game during training camp. He talked about, it was that day that practice was sloppy and it was a raining, drizzly day. And he brought up that Jets game where it felt like the energy wasn't right, and whether they let the conditions or the environment get to them, they got to figure out a way to fight through that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is not even going to be a new thing that D'Amico sprung on them. I think he's probably talked about the Jets game a few times already, even when it didn't involve the Jets.
Yeah, that was I mean, that was on par with losing to the Panthers for me last year, just given where they were in the season. You know, like the Texans seemed to have figured some things out at that point.
For me, it was worse than the Panthers game because it's not like Bryce Young had an awesome day on that, whereas
Wilson, you got whooped.
Zach Wilson had the best game he had in his entire NFL career on that day.
Yep.
By many statistics, that was Zach Wilson's best day.
The weather on Thursday in New York.
New Jersey.
I just put it in New York. I'm guessing it'll be the same in North Jersey. High of 77, low of 57, and partly sunny.
Nice.
I know it won't be sunny
nice
at night.
Nice weather, yeah.
But it'll be. You know what? No precipitation.
Even Anthony Richardson could stay in for all the snaps on that game and weather like that.
Too. I think he'd be like, "This is very pleasant."
It's one of the nicest things about. Yeah. This is one of the best parts. Anybody who played high school football or even soccer or anything can appreciate this. When all of a sudden you get that first actual fall weather. And it's down in the 50s. You feel like you can run forever.
77 during the day on October 31st in New York.
Oh, 77?
During the day. 57 low, high of 77.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it'll be getting cooled off there by the time.
I guess it sounds like perfect nighttime weather for football. Here's Nick Caserio talking about the Jets as a team. Says very similar to the Texans.
They play with a very physical mindset on both sides of the ball. So they can run the ball. Playing physical is about running the ball and stopping a run. So they play urgent. They fly to the ball. They get a lot of hats to the ball. They play aggressive. That's their mentality. That's their mindset. So we have to prepare for that. And quite frankly, I mean, that's our mindset as well. So it's, I would say, similar thought process, similar overall philosophy. The team that executes the best ultimately are going to be the team that wins.
All right, so there you go. That's Nick Caserio on the New York Jets.
In East Rutherford, New Jersey at 8 p.m., it's going to be 74 degrees. So that's actually Anthony Richardson would have a hard time in that weather.
Yeah, he'd be sweating. That's unseasonably warm. Okay. By the way, the Colts got moved, flexed to Sunday Night Football this week. They did it like 2 weeks ago. I forget who they're playing. I think maybe Minnesota.
Why on earth would they do that?
I don't know. I was thinking that at the time. They flexed the Colts. I think the Colts play the Vikings this week. But yeah, if you're...
What are we in, week nine?
Week nine, yeah.
Are the games going to be that miserable? I guess we picked the right week to have a
bye week.
Yeah.
So I think, I'm pretty sure that's the case. So buckle up, football fans. They play Minnesota, 7:20 p.m. Sunday night. The whole world is going to get a look at fatigued Anthony Richardson.
That Minnesota defense doesn't have anybody who can fly around and chase him down, I'm sure. I don't know. I don't know much about the Vikings defense. Yeah. But yeah. Now, they showed showed some vulnerability last week.
Mm-hmm. They did.
Is Anthony Richardson as good as Jameis Winston yet? An emphatic no.
No.
Yeah.
But Jameis didn't play the Vikings.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He played the Ravens. Yes, yeah.
The Vikings played. They played the. I don't know. How many hip drop? This is off of the 5-hour energy fan line. How many hip drop penalties have there been this year?
Not that many.
One that matters. Joe Mixon. Yeah. That's the only one that in
Not
my
Not even
world.
That many. The whole thing about the hip drop tackle is that you'd barely seen any in football until a few years ago. So it wasn't like it was that hard to get rid of. It was funny when I was watching some Devin White highlights. From earlier in his career, he was a hip drop aficionado.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was a hip dropping machine.
Maybe that got factored into his free agency price tag.
I don't worry about it or anything. He ended up playing 30 plus snaps in the game the other day. Like one of our listeners suggested, spying the quarterback. And I think with Devin White, you got to be careful with just how much you put on his plate and until he gets into the scheme and how much. You know, he hasn't been consistent the last couple of years. You don't want to necessarily really rely on him heavily in coverage unless he just really clicks and fits in this defense and with the coaching. Maybe something clicks for him here.
I like every interview I've seen with him since he got here. I really like him. He's really excited to be here.
I think he reminds me of Will Anderson a little bit in that he's got a really good energy about him, but everything just needs to be channeled and tamed. And I think maybe Devin White, even though he's been in the league a while now, he's still a young man. He's 26 years old, 27 years old.
Yeah.
There's still time for him being in the right system and with D'Amico managing his strengths and weaknesses. I think you're going to see some notable plays out of Devin White. And he got after the quarterback. He affected
almost
Anthony
had
Richardson
him, man.
In the game.
Almost had him on a blitz. Yeah, that was, it's going to be a nice pickup. And we'll see what else. You know, we got a week till the trade deadline. See if Nick's working the phones.
That week in week 10, San Francisco's playing. Is it week 10 or week 11 that they flexed them?
For the Colts for this weekend. It was Colts-Vikings.
Oh, this Sunday weekend. Night, oh, I
this
apologize.
Coming weekend.
Okay,
yeah, this coming Sunday.
Okay.
This coming Sunday. Boy, poor Anthony Richardson. I mean, that's going to be a topic. Like in like on. It's
oh,
one thing,
they're going to be so many.
His next game is like against the Titans, and it's buried with Andrew Catalan.
Yeah,
and
anybody that might not be people that might not otherwise really check in on the sports news and everything
to
are going to see
production meetings with Collinsworth talking.
They're
about
gonna
it.
Have. They're going to be every time he's breathing hard or anything. Yeah. They're going to talk about it. Yeah.
I'm
eager to hear what Collinsworth's take on the situation is.
Yeah, I'm too.
Because he'll interview him and ask him about it and all that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Both Florida guys, by the way. Collinsworth, University of Florida, Anthony Richardson, University
of
Florida.
How weird it is. Even just Miami plays Buffalo at noon, Dallas plays Atlanta at noon. Like, there's games that just have way more glitz to them for a primetime game.
Yeah, I don't get it. They might have done it when Minnesota was still undefeated, possibly.
Well, I mean, it's still, yeah, Minnesota's a story. They are still a story, but yeah.
Is it a Sunday night story?
No.
Yeah.
Not enough to for them playing the Colts to be the story.
It's weird. It's very weird. Maybe the TV execs thought the Texans were going to lose to the Colts. Disrespect.
Disrespect. I would say even Washington at New York is better just because of the Jaden Daniels dynamic.
For sure. For sure. All right. The news that we are waiting on, to my knowledge, have not heard anything on Stephon Diggs. Let's read into it a little bit. What do we think is happening here with Diggs? And we'll continue to look at. We'll get to Miko's thoughts on the challenges that the Jets pose as we await the fellows from In the Loop. Will join us a little later on as we head towards the top of the hour. Stay there.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so we are in day three of Diggs Watch. Stephon Diggs and his right knee.
That's for me turning
microphone
on my mic.
Good job, dude. Good job. Day three.
That wasn't dinging Stephon Diggs being injured.
No. Yeah, no, that would be weird.
Day three of, look, the Texans have become more Astros-like in a lot of ways. They're moving towards that, which has been nice to see. I don't need to see them try to copy everything the Astros do.
Oh, you mean like the injury handling?
But the information withheld about injuries, it feels a little bit Astros-like with the Texans this year. It's Christian Harris, medical mystery, you know, and now Stephon Diggs. If it is an ACL, usually most ACLs are diagnosed on the field in the moment. You can tell. And then sometimes it's not that simple or easy. But if the longer we don't hear anything at all, the more optimistic I am that maybe it's not an ACL.
Yeah.
Because it should be relatively easy to diagnose if it's an ACL. So if he's getting a second or a third opinion, we'll see. But at the very least, maybe it's not as clear cut as an ACL.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep my notifications on. Just on Twitter,
yeah.
Just because I would assume one of the newsbreakers will have that first, and I'm going to make sure.
You don't want to get duped like you did.
Yeah,
earlier.
I've got Schefter on my push notification, so if I get it on a push notification, that means it's the real Adam Schefter.
Yeah,
unless Twitter's trying to get a conspiracy going against me. Let's see.
Excuse me. You and Meltzer both. Whenever you guys get sunk by fake news. It's especially depressing to me because I rely on you guys, people like you, that tend to be really good with the details and the memory and stuff, to kind of be you're my AI.
Yeah.
And so when you let me down, I'm like, oh, I don't know. I guess maybe I don't know who to believe or trust anymore.
Sometimes AI messes up, though, man. You know, like you've used ChatGPT.
Oh, no,
before.
I don't trust AI at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Not one little bit.
Right.
I've tried to. No, this is where the problem with the AI is that it is. I've used it to kind of bullet point articles for me. But even when it bullet points articles for me, whenever I start to ask, so what I'll do is I might read 10 articles, and I'm like, all right, I know my brain, and I have a really hard time just organizing everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have AI say, like, I'll copy and paste 10 articles. Please pull out the 10 most important keys to these articles or whatever, and put them in an outline for me. As soon as I ask it to add stats from those articles, it's dicey.
It's bad,
and it's long. And I've read the articles, so I can go through them. I'm like, well, this is just wrong. But then I've gone to websites to read an article, And it's pretty obvious. I can tell when, like, oh, this AI. Is written AI. Yeah. AI, because it's bringing up something like a story from last year's team or something. And it's just,
it's
wrong.
Can't trust any of these
it's
numbers.
It's flat out wrong.
Yeah, that's
so
sucks.
Now when I read the articles, I got to be sure that it's somebody that I know is an actual human.
So an article by AI, does it tell you it's by AI or does it give some fake author name at the top?
They give a fake or staff or something like that. Yeah. Okay. Or sometimes there's no byline at all. That's a key indicator.
That's the tell.
Yeah. They don't want to get caught creating a fake writer, but they just won't tell you who wrote the article.
I got you.
There was one yesterday I went to, and it had two column, like one little blurb about the Jets' defense, another little blurb about the Texans' defense, and I could tell that both of them were actually about the Jets' defense.
Oh, okay.
Except they put Texans in front of the Jets. I'm like, because I'm reading through, I'm like, this doesn't, no, that's not right. I know that that's not right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
I know Hassan Reddick doesn't play for the Texans. I look, hey, I'm a detail hound, okay? Yeah.
I'd
but
take
these are
him.
The details that don't escape me.
I'd take him. I mean, he wouldn't start on this team, but I would take him on the team.
I don't think he's officially a starter for the Jets yet. But,
yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, he's kind of that type of player. He's a situational pass rusher.
Yeah, he gets paid well to do it. At least I thought. He doesn't think he gets paid too well to do it, apparently.
No.
So the Diggs thing, if we can plan ahead here, I'm going to try to get into a headspace where we're going to be without Diggs for an extended period of time. And then if it turns out it's good news, then, you know, I've already planned ahead for the bad news.
Mm-hmm.
The one silver lining that in talking to people about this yesterday, talking to friends about this yesterday, Texan fans, the one silver lining would be, okay, well, if you did want to bring Diggs back next year, he would more likely be a little more affordable or inclined to do a prove it deal coming off an ACL.
Yeah.
I like having Stephon Diggs on the Texans. Let me just say that up front. I like what he brings to training camp. I like what people say he's bringing to the team behind the scenes. I've been perfectly fine with what he's brought this team on the field. It hasn't created the fireworks that we've all wanted. But the fact of the matter is, all the guys we've been talking about, Tank, Nico, Joe Mixon, and Stephon Diggs, they've been on the field at the same time for like one game this year.
Yeah.
That's it. And it was a pretty good game. It was in week one against the Colts.
I think there is a part when we talk about, you know what, I'm guilty of this already. When we talk about the issues with the Texans offense right now, I typically do it thinking, yes, but there is still time to correct some of this stuff. And if they can just get over the hump in a few multiple different areas, and if they can get competent left guard play. I mean, that's the only one big personnel question I have on the team right now is left guard.
We are talking. You know how I say, like, man, if you're the left guard and they talk about you, it's got to be pretty bad. We are talking. We have talked about left guard for, it feels like, 25 straight
days.
That's
what, you know what, actually, I texted Brandy during the game because we're watching from the press box. I've got the TV up in front of me. And I just kind of texted Brandy to see, like, what are they saying about Kenyon Green? Because I kept looking up, and they were focused on him on the sideline, showing him and everything. And basically, what you'd expect. It's like, it's not good.
I know the part of the game you're talking about. Because you and I are sitting there in the press box. I'm looking up. I'm going, boy, the camera's on Kenyon quite a bit here. This can't be good.
Right.
He's the left guard.
I mean, so that's the one big glaring issue where I feel like, it's just a personnel swap at some point because I don't know. And I think there's a ripple effect from that to where when they don't have to call protections that are accounting for the fact that they don't trust the left guard, then all of a sudden it gets easier for Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard to just be good offensive tackles and take care of their business, take care of actual edge rushers instead of sliding inside to help out with potential blitzers.
Yep.
So, there's something to be said that it's right now, just like sometimes the sum is greater than than its parts or greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the minuses aren't as bad as the sum of all the, if you get Kenyon Green out of there, that's probably a whole different deal.
It has a good ripple effect on other things going on. I would agree with that. Now, that said, I think you can win a Super Bowl with Nico Collins and Tank Dell as your two wide receivers.
Yeah, that's what I meant to meander to eventually, is that the one big thing that I kind of ignore because I don't like thinking about ifs too much, the return of Nico Collins. Mm-hmm. Simply having, it's going to be amazing how much better a play caller Bobby Slowik is once Nico Collins is back on the field. And we will, and he won't get any credit for it or anything like that. It's just the way things work. But also people will, like, some of the gushing praise might start coming back simply with the addition of Nico Collins.
His credit will come when the hot seat coaching candidates or the hot coaching candidate lists start coming out. That'll be the credit he starts. That's the only credit that matters.
I mean, the real big question mark headed into the season was, can Bobby Slowik construct a good rushing attack?
Yeah.
And right now, it feels more. It felt a little bit better Sunday, but it still felt like a lot of, wow, Joe Mixon's really good.
Yeah, this is not the 49ers. Like, Christian McCaffrey's been out all year. You know what they still do? Yeah. Run the football really well.
Yeah.
Jordan Mason, they got the kid out of Louisville, whose name I can't remember. Garetto?
It's Chuck Knobloch.
It's not Chuck Knobloch.
It is. No. It's weird. People don't talk about it enough. His mom was a huge Chuck Knobloch.
Huge
man.
Chuck Knobloch. He named the kid after a second baseman who couldn't throw to first base.
Yes.
And by the way, I left out Nico when I was talking about my little PFF scouring before. Like, oh, there's not really that many guys near the top of their position groups. It's CJ. It's Will and Daniil, Aziz, Nico Collins, number one wide receiver in football on PFF.
Still.
Number one.
Well, I mean, the grades don't change, but
he's number one.
He might be falling out of the number of qualifying reps if he doesn't come back soon.
Yeah, if he doesn't come back, maybe this game pushes him out. But John Lopez and Reggie Atatula are here.
Isaac Garendo.
Okay.
I had the benefit of the internet. Though,
okay. So. Well, that's fine. Mm-hmm.
I prefer Chuck Knobloch.
Strange way
to
pronounce Knobloch. Yeah.
I prefer that. Right. That was quite the pull right there.
Yeah. That was just strong.
Welcome to Sean's personal hell. At least I could remember it instead of being like, it's Sean, you know, that second baseman, you know.
I love that, though. It's fun. It's like playing password every day on the show. It's fun. Good job. I've not seen the announcement or the presentation
or you
sharing the good news with Janice McNair on the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah, that was...
How did that go down?
Actually, we did it in the preseason. Okay. We let her know, went up to the owner's suite, which... Whew, They got a good thing going up there.
Oh, really?
It's nice. Baby.
Big shot. You mean the owner has good grub up there?
My big takeaway was, wow, what a suite this is.
I still wish they should bring back Judge dang it.
That guy.
Hoffines?
Chuck Knobloch?
Oh, okay. Knobloch. The Judge Hoffines. So, Reginald, there was the owner of the Oilers had a suite, like an apartment in the building.
Yeah.
And he owns a hotel there right on the South Loop. I don't know what it was at the time. But like, he kind of turned that whole little arena of his down. And this is back in the 70s when life was different.
Yeah.
Not everything hit the papers or social media. And he lived the life that I think you would want to live if you were a super wealthy
it was
local
gilded.
Celebrity.
Like, literally gilded.
Oh, really?
His apartment.
He had an apartment in the Astrodome.
Yeah,
every kid's fantasy growing up. You're like, I'm gonna have an apartment. That's what he said. Yeah,
middle of the night, I'm gonna get milk, cookies, and batting practice.
Yeah. But no, she was like overwhelmed.
She
started crying. Oh, when we told her.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. So kind of had to sit on it a little while, and the audio wasn't great, so they had me kind of narrate the whole thing.
Okay, is there video out there?
Oh, yeah, video and all that stuff.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. It was cool.
Seth pointed out that was cool to see her out there for Andre's deal at halftime.
Oh, yeah.
That was really neat.
I still feel bad for Seth, even though I know better.
Why?
For not being able to go down there. Remember I told you in the
press conference? Halftime? I mean, I could have. It was just kind of, I got so much stuff going on in game day that I kind of, like, when they do some of the
Sean reunion
Sean
told me,
stuff,
he goes, don't worry about it.
He's fine.
He needed me. He felt a lot better with me asking him questions about football instead of being down there with Andre Johnson.
We couldn't hear the speech either. I thought I was going to be able to hear the speech, but we couldn't. They opened the windows for us, but we just couldn't. It was too garbled up there.
I didn't even notice the windows were open. I'm like, God, this crowd got really loud all of a sudden. Wow.
I actually saw a bunch of those guys at various points during the day, though.
Nice.
Gary Walker.
Yeah.
Pre-game show.
I felt better about it, too, because Gary, because I originally planned on doing a lot of the stuff, but I ended up having to make a quick trip. So I was flying in on Saturday night, and Gary said, Gary made me feel better because he reminded us that we're both old. He's like, no, they went into some club where, you know, it was like you had to turn your shoulders and move, and I left.
That's the only time I've spent with Gary Walker was on that pregame show for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like a club guy to me.
Well, back in the day, but
right now.
I'll tell you, Gary's a smooth talker. Gary's one of the all-time.
Got game?
No, not game. Just in terms of him. Just being able to converse with anybody and everybody. Yeah. Very charismatic person.
Yeah, charismatic is a good way.
That's
to
a
put
real
it.
Talent.
Yeah. What do you guys make of the lack of Diggs information up to this point on Tuesday?
It's funny because yesterday I was in a similar boat as Seth. I was like, it feels like we would have known early on. It feels like when these types of things happen, you get the early reporting that, ooh, they don't feel great about this. Although, notoriously, the Texans are pretty tight-lipped about this, so I understand that to some extent. But I was like, the longer it goes, the more I'm starting to think that maybe this is...
Maybe.
They can't figure out what it is, and I feel like ACL tear or something is a little bit easier to figure out earlier rather than later.
Yeah.
So it's either that this is something that's a little weird and maybe they'll have to pain manage it, or... And maybe I shouldn't put this out here. It's like some extraordinary case of something bad that we couldn't even, that normal doctors have never understood. No, we need to go to like specialists.
Damn it, Reggie.
He's going to Germany. Right.
He's going to Germany.
Yeah, I think that's and some guys have a policy of always getting a second opinion too, no matter what it is or how clear cut it is. And it might be as simple as that he had to go off to Alabama to have Dr. Andrews take a look at
it. Has Diggs ever even been hurt before?
Looking at his history.
Yeah.
Last time he had anything was like a knee sprain in 21. He hasn't dealt with a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody blame me because I was talking to, last week, I explained, like, my feeling on Diggs is I think they got him because they know Tank and Nico are going to miss some time every year.
Ooh.
And Diggs is a rock.
Yeah.
And I had someone throw that quote in my face today shortly after I read a fake Schefter tweet. It's been a hell of a day for me. All right, fellas, the floor will be yours momentarily. Seth, antibodies to you.
Antibodies and Chuck Knobloch.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.